Hey everybody, welcome to Catching Up with the Cougs, a chance to learn and discover what makes Lauren Masuga the champion that she is. Cougs is a speed skier on the FIS World Cup circuit, as well as one of the most positive and fun people on the planet. Although just 22 years young, she will drop some great knowledge about what it takes to become one of the world's fastest skiers. My name is Doug Lewis, a two-time Olympian, a world championship medalist in downhill, and director of Elite Team Fitness Camps. I first met Koobs when she came to Elite Team 10 years ago as an 11-year-old with her smile, her positivity, her potential, and her commitment to being the best she can. So without further ado, let's catch up with the Koobs. So, Lauren Masuga, congratulations on your first World Cup win, the first ever Super G win for an American on the St. Anton course. Has it sunk in yet?
No, if I'm being honest, it hasn't. It keeps feeling like it's a dream. Like I'm gonna wake up and it's not gonna be there. And then I woke up this morning and sure enough, the award was still there. And I was like, wow.
Oh my goodness. Where are you now? It's been about 48 hours since your win. Where are you now and what's next?
Yeah, well, we spent the night in St. Anton and now we're in Cortina. And we had the day off today and some GS training tomorrow.
Okay, before we get to the race, tell us what the 48 hours has been like. Has it been just a dream, a whirlwind? Tell us what happens after a race ends and you just won it.
I mean, had to figure out how to like be on the podium. That sounds funny, but I didn't know where to go, what to do. Luckily, Stephanie and Fede were there, kind of dragging me along. They're like, you do this. I was like, thank you. But I mean, after all that, like, I mean, trying to leave the finish was one of the hardest parts because just everyone was there, like, asking for pictures. I was like, hey, it was just so cool to have so many people, I don't know, excited for me, I guess. That just it was fun to like be that person for a minute. But then got back to the hotel. That's when I called my dad and well, he wasn't up. That's when he found out. Got to tell him, like, called him, woke him up out of, like, he was sleeping. And I got to say, I won. He was like, what do you mean? I was like, I won. So that was so cool.
Incredible. I can't believe he was sleeping, but that's just classic. Is there anything that you learned besides how to go on the podium? Do you have a US Ski Team women's downhill culture and something that you do that night?
I mean, well, I went and got an Aperol. That was the goal of the night. And I was like, this is my little treat to myself. But that had to happen after the lift. Crazy enough, ESO won. I went back and lifted. Still had to go to the gym.
That is awesome. Talk about bringing you back to real life and about the future.
Yeah.
Very cool. Special dinner. Did you go to bed late? Did you go to bed early?
Well, I guess it was very late. Yeah. We went out. I mean, if anyone's been to St. Anton, you know the crazy kangaroo. So we were up there, and I mean, it was so fun. We had like a 12 of us, and we got to do a saber champagne, which was super fun.
I saw that video, so maybe I can put it in the podcast, but
Yeah.
seems like it worked. Any glass get in the way?
Not that I know of. Very fun night. I mean, I won't forget it.
So let's talk about the details of the winning day, not before the run, like
Yeah.
getting up. What was the morning like in the hotel? Take us through your morning routine to get to breakfast. What goes on in the life of a World Cup winner?
Well, it's not super exciting at then. I woke up, went down. It's like then I spend 10 minutes on the bike and then do a 20 minute like stretching, mobility, and power. Head down for a 10-minute breakfast. Then got all my stuff, ski gear, headed to the mountain, got my boots on in the gondola, like typical, very typical morning, actually. Yeah, but I got up to the start and like being on that down, like, or on the Super G, like, I felt good that morning. Like, I was like, it. this seems like a run that I could do well on, or like in a course, because we looked at the POV the night before, and I mean, I was already excited then. And I was like, okay, this looks like something I would like, and yeah, guess it was.
Yeah, what does feeling good feel like? I mean, were you confident, no worries, excited? What is that? Was that a different feeling or just a feeling that you sometimes have when everything's lining up?
No, I think it's just like something that, like, maybe it was confidence and just being like, no, I've been skiing well. I know I can ski it well. I just have to do it. And I think it just kind of all came together.
Awesome. Well, this is not, so everybody knows, St. Anton is one of the toughest. And especially with flat light or tough conditions. Talk about what was the overall thinking after inspection? Was it smoother? Was it rougher? What were the changes that you made after inspection?
Yeah, well, during inspection, I mean, it was very flat light, and but the snow was still good, like pretty hard snow. Like I was picturing a line, but I mean, when we got up to the start, the sun had come out a little bit, but it was also super dark. It was not, you couldn't tell what you were going to get when you started, but like there were a few changes in the line. Like you could see there was rattle forming, like bumps from the earlier skiers, just because the snow wasn't as hard as we thought. And I mean, had to change, not anything drastic, but just change my approach to a few things based off of that rattle. And I mean, I lucked out when I got in the start, the sun came out. I was like, this is my time. If I'm gonna do it, I gotta do it right now.
Well, something was shining down beyond, besides the sun. A little bit of luck. Awesome.
Yeah.
You were the first US skier, Bib 17. No personal course reports, but what did you get from the coaches? What was the reports? And what did you do with that info?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of like, you just gotta go for it. Like, this is the kind of course you just have to go and like lay it all out there. And I knew like there were like two pr like pretty important turns in which the coaches pointed out, like coming off of the steeps onto the flats. Like, if you don't care your speed there, I mean, you're already falling so far behind, and it's not like you're not doing anything wrong in the flats, but you'd be losing time there. And I mean, I think I just nailed those two turns. It was coming off of the maybe sixth gate from the top and coming off of after ice fall and like going through there, they were just like, you have to nail this one. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. No, and we partner with Norway, so I got a little report from Kajsa, but her, which actually helped a lot. She literally just said, she was like, you have to go. It's a little dark, but you just gotta go. And like she specifically said go, and I was like, okay, time to go, time to go.
That's awesome. Well, there's a couple specific parts. I don't know the names, but one, before the ice fall, a lot of people were right by the net, skiing on the net. I was
Yeah.
watching you and you were 6 feet inside. You had a different line, a good line. Tell us that section and how you were able to execute.
Yeah, so I mean, the days before in the downhill, like it was kind of the same approach. You had to come into the turn, start the turn, but wait to go. I mean, if you timed it wrong and you came in too like straight headed towards the net, and if you started the turn too late, you're just gonna keep skiing towards the net. So it was like that fine line of when to start it. And I mean, the downhill days I did pretty good, but I could have done it better. And then today I was like, or that day I was like, I have to nail this. And inspection, I did it like twice. I just kept looking at it. I was like, okay, I know when I need to start the turn. I just have to commit there. And I think it just was very well timed. Like I watched my video. I did come out very high, and I think I carried very good speed through that, because I just like looked like no issue. Didn't feel like it. Don't get me wrong. It is a very hard turn. But yeah, I think I just committed to my inspected line, and it worked.
Nice. So then you come out of that, and then I think ice fall happens, and it's big speed, big pressure, big bumps. What was the thought going in down that ice fall and down the rest of the course?
It was just don't catch an edge. Because you're going straight. Alex had radioed up. He's like, girls are catching an edge there. You have to stay focused. I was like, okay. And sure enough, I was coming through. And it was like, it's a little like it was so icy. I mean, an inspection. I actually like you're not allowed to ski slide down it. You can go in and out along it. And I went in to look at it, and I couldn't stop. I just kept going. And I think two people fell in inspection that day. Like that part of the course is so icy. So I was trying not to catch an edge, but then you're also going straight down it. Coming out of it, I was just like, you had to start the turn the moment you passed the right footer, like exiting ice fall. And I think that was really hard because if you were a second too late, it just pushed so far.
So you've taken us through the big right footer. You missed the net coming out. Hit ice fall, just attacked it. Now, how does that affect the bottom of that course, which still turns and falls away? And talk about running the second half of the course.
Yeah, no, so that bottom part is just like it has a lot of like terrain, and I mean you have to just keep moving. And like when you're coming out of ice fall, I think we're hitting 100 Ks, maybe. No, can't remember, but I think it was about 100 like kilometers an
It
hour.
was 70 miles an hour, so it was like
Yeah,
180. Let me
so we
just put
were
that in perspective.
hauling out of that.
Yeah.
So you can picture how quickly you need to start moving there. And I like down there, you just have to be so clean because the moment like you start to stable it, like you just lose so much speed. And I mean, just coming through it, and then there's a bunch of like big, like clean turns, and then you come to the traverse. And down the traverse, you just had to be so far over the left ski to come back up because they said, I mean, how they said it, you just had to get over it to just sneak by this right footer, and then you're basically into the finish.
I mean, I've watched it 100 times. You come through that finish. It seems like you knew you were fast or you saw a green light. Take us through what happened because you were instantly taking the mouth guard out and going crazy.
But yeah, well, it was kind of a, so most of the time, like the moment I crossed the finish line, like you can hear the crowd. I couldn't really hear anything. I was like, oh, I think it was kind of a good run. I don't know. Like I thought it felt good, and then like slowly as like got down, like and saw the one. Like you can see that split second. I like didn't actually think it was a one. Like in that little moment, I was like, no way. And then I was like, well, it can't be wrong. I was like, yes.
What was that like? Take us through that 5 minutes. You have teammates, you've got a crowd, you've got television.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just like, I mean, you could see how excited I was. Like, I just like was like shaking. It was just so excited. I had to keep like glancing at the board to make sure it was real. I was like, is it really there? And then like exiting the corral, like I just looked at it one last time because it was right there. I was like, oh my gosh, that's insane. And then of course I ran to the leader's chair.
Yes, and took ownership of it for as long as it was going to take. There you were. So, just reflecting back to my bronze medal run, again, I did the same thing. I looked at three and I'm like, oh, three. And then I looked at it again and said, third bronze, crazy.
Yeah.
And I got to be congratulated by Franz Klammer, Pyramid Zurber again. Take us through hanging out with your heroes.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was so cool. It was just so funny. Like, because I mean, I know all these girls, but then it's like cool. Like, they all like came up to me, and it was like so fun to be hanging out with like, well, Fede. I mean, I've known her a while from being both on Rossi, but it's like, it was cool to be right there with her because I mean I've been watching her for a few years now, like she's pretty cool. And then it was just, oh my gosh, it was just crazy, just everything.
Amazing. Were you nervous sitting in that chair waiting? Did you think you were going to get beat? Like, what was that finish
No,
like?
yeah. Well, I was crazy. I was like talking to Federico about this. Like we were like, if like this when the sun comes out, like anyone could come in, and like, I mean, like a Lindsay, we were watching her. We're like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I mean, don't she still had a phenomenal run. We're like, oh my God. And then like Mallory Blanc, we were watching her, and like she started coming down. I mean, I think she skied into 9. And we're like, oh my God. Like there was still a little bit of like someone could come down and do it. And then I didn't like until the very last racer. I don't think I was like released that. I was like, but then when she came down, I was like, oh my. It's over.
It's
I'm
over.
still here.
And it's yours. So, not many people have won a World Cup. Tell us what you have to do. Is it interviews? Is it signing? Is it peeing in a cup? Is it, well, like, what happens next?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of like signings, like a bunch of people. I've done a few phone calls and I have a few lined up as well. I mean, didn't get drug tested that day, which was kind of nice because then I got to just go and enjoy it, enjoy the win. And then people, like random people knowing who I am, I guess. Like, it was fun. I came back to the hotel and the hotels actually gave me, it was a winner necklace made of hot dogs. It was a wiener necklace.
Hopefully you didn't keep that.
No, but I did wear it around for a little bit. Oh, it's my winter necklace.
Goodness. So, I mean, there's probably so much, but what's your biggest takeaway from that day?
It's just like to put everything out there. Like I tried as hard as I could, and I mean, it worked. Everything was right. Yeah, I think just finding that same thing, like that's what it takes to win is everything. So,
Yeah. Nate, list out the most important parts or skills.
Well, I think it's confidence is a huge part of it. Like ever since last year, like I've kept gaining more confidence, and it shows because I've moved up in the ranks. And man, I think it also just takes that like dedication. And I know everyone has, but like this is what I do. I want to win, and I do everything I can to do it. And I mean, I also think loving the sport too. Can't forget that. I am having fun all the time. And I mean, you have to love also just the skiing side of the sport. Anytime I can go free skiing, oh my gosh, I go. Like, that's so important. You can't just be a ski racer. You have to be a skier first.
Yes. Oh my God. So let's talk about confidence. First of all, you've been building it. So it's easy to build confidence when things are going well. So how do you take these little wins to keep stacking up this confidence? You know, if you're talking to a little a junior racer who's having these little wins, how do you keep that confidence and keep it growing?
Yeah, no, I think it's important. Like when I or like I know like speed is scary, like and it takes confidence to do it. And but every you can compare something every time to a previous experience, and I think that's what's helped me a lot. Is like when I first started speed, I was like, oh, this looks like this is fast, and I was like, no, I've gone fast before. This jump looks big. I've done a big jump before. This turn looks weird. I've done a turn just like this, made like in copper. And then I think that's the same thing as like, oh, I got 30th last year, my first race. I know I have the skill level to ski into the 30th again. And sure enough, it happened again. And I said, okay, I know it's in there. I just have to do it again. And just recognizing within yourself, like, if you've done it, no matter how small it is, you have to take that with you and say, you've done it once, you can do it again.
Excellent advice. Now switch it over. You've been hurt before. You've had bad runs. You've had tough days, tough weeks. How do you find that confidence if things aren't going well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the love for the sport comes from. You have to push through the hard days. And I mean, take whatever you can out of those days. And I mean, everyone has bad days. It happens. But like, as long as you can work your way through that, and I mean, I know I'm repeating myself, but think of your past experiences. Like, you can do it again. I mean, yeah, I broke my leg at the Youth Olympics, my first run. So didn't make it very far, but I went to the gym. I had a goal in mind. I think that's super important is to have a goal as well. I set that goal, and I mean, a lot of days were hard. I mean, returning from injury, not fun, but I knew why I wanted to do it, and I kept going. And yeah, it just kept working towards the goal.
Remembering that goal, remembering those little wins definitely help for sure. Oh my goodness. So, you called your dad. I always want to get back to the family and coaches and friends. You call your dad. How does your mom find out? And you have sisters all over the world and your brother all over the world. How did they all find out and react?
Well, no one really knew. No one was up, or Sam didn't have, Sam's in Norway. She was Nordic skiing, so she didn't have service. I didn't call her till like get a hold of her till like 2 hours after the race. I mean, I told you how I called my dad, and then he goes, "Oh, I think your mom just left for the airport. She was taking Allie to the airport to drop her off to go to Waterville." And I called them. They're like, "Oh my gosh, we just saw, like, this is insane." And I then tried to do a family call, and Sam was on for a second. Allie and my mom were a bit. My dad was, and I think it was really early at home. I didn't really consider that. And Daniel comes on the call and he goes, "Oh, no, I'm leaving." He had no idea. I think he was just like, "I don't know what's happening on this call, but I'm going back to bed." It was just the most Masuga kind of convo.
Talk about your teammates. Incredible teammates you've been training one with for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, this team, like, 2 years ago, there were only four of us, and now we have like eight of us starting these races, and it's so fun. I mean, I think it's actually a huge, like, part of this. Like, you have to have like that team aspect. I mean, they're like my family on the road. We're on the road all the time, and I mean, it's huge to have like their support, but also be like hang out with friends. Like, we're all such good friends, and we all push each other to be better, which I think is a huge, huge thing to have. And in like every training day, it's all just a competition, like all just one big race, but we're all so excited for each other. Like every time someone comes to the fit, like we're all rooting each other on, which is super important. And yeah, I guess they helped me get here.
Yeah, for sure. I grew up with great teammates who pulled me up, and then I went into that role of kind of being the leader and pulling them all up. But it definitely is part of the success is that team. So you knew Vaughn or didn't know Vaughn, but Vaughn was a hero of yours. Didn't get to be with her when she was racing. Now she's back. Talk about this whole Vaughn thing and how it plays.
Yeah, I mean, it's so cool. I mean, she's my idol, and I mean, it just never crossed my mind I'd be racing with her, because I made the team like the year she was off the team, and all of a sudden, like, she's just training with us. She's right there, and I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And it's so neat. Like, I mean, she has so much knowledge. I mean, she has an athlete's perspective on everything, and she's been very like open to helping us. I mean, she wouldn't have to if she didn't want to, but she has been. Like, I've asked her questions in inspection, and she's helped me like just answered anything and given advice on everything, and it's been really fun having her back.
Amazing. Amazing. I remember I won my medal, bronze medalist. All of a sudden, I was the talk of the town. Going into the next race, I had slightly different nerves that I had to deal with, being, I don't know, the favorite or a lot of pressure. How do you think about going into the next race, which is Cortina, about handling this pressure, if there is?
Yeah, no, well, actually, I've been like the past 2 years, something I've been working on is my mental like game, like how I approach things. And I think, well, we'll find out this weekend, but I don't feel that nervous in that kind of way. And I think it's because of this like mental, I don't know if it hasn't been training, but been working on it. And I mean, it's helped me like in the past race, like my first finals, I wasn't too nervous and like did pretty well. And I mean, go after Beaver Creek, like I guess there was pressure to do well against St. Moritz, and it went pretty well. And I mean, don't get me wrong, this is di like it's kind of different. It's winning. But I'm hoping, or I think I know that my nerves will be okay. We'll find out, but
Yeah.
it's, yeah, been working on it, so.
What are those kinds of mental skills that you've latched onto, practiced, and now are taking advantage of?
Yeah. Well, the one that's like helped me stay focus is just blocking everything out. It sounds weird, but I'm a totally different person on race day and in the start. I don't really talk to anyone. Like, I know what I want. I watch one racer and then I just have my music playing, and it's literally just focusing on what I'm working on. It's literally like I'll just be up there going like front of the boot, outside scoop. That's all I'm thinking about. And I think the visualization has been huge. I mean, I think it's one of the greatest advantages you can get for yourself without like having to do anything. If you can visualize yourself skiing the course like 5 times and someone else can't, like you already have skied it that many more times. And I think like just being able to do that is huge. Like I know exactly where I'm going the moment I push out of the gate, like exactly where I'm starting the turn. It's all, you remember every little bump. And I think you just, that's just something that you can use as like to get ahead of the game.
So the question then becomes, when did you start using them? Obviously, you didn't get the World Cup and say, "Oh, I need a mental game." When did you start this? And I guess it maybe probably wasn't that intense, but when did you start practicing those mental skills?
Man, I mean, the beginning of last year, that's probably when it like really started to kick in. Like the previous year before, I didn't score any World Cup points, but I was like working right through the Europa Cups, and it was kind of together. Like I knew what I needed to do, but I just couldn't really figure it out. And then like last year in St. Moritz and Val d'Isère, that's when it started to be like, okay, wait, no, I know I like music in the start. And then I was like, no, I don't like talking in the start. And then like the visualization, I was like, I need to know where I'm going, because all these girls have skied these places like 50 times. I haven't. I need to figure it out because I'm behind in that sense, because speed is all, like not all, but a lot of it is experience, because like Goja and Fede have been skiing these courses for years. This is my 3rd year, so I need to try to keep up with them. And that was how I could do that. And yeah, it slowly, each race I would just, whatever worked, I'd add it in and just keep it going. Just keep finding things that I like and prefer.
Excellent answer. Great message for all the young junior racers out there. And they can even start now. If you're 14, 16, you can start with that visualization and breathing. And I like the mantras, those mantras. So let's talk about Cortina. Tell us when the training starts. You raced there 2 years, a Super G in 2023, 43rd place. Tell us, you probably can tell us exactly what went wrong, but 2024, 15th in the Super G and 16th and 23rd in the downhill. So, 3rd year at Cortina coming in, what's the process for you to go through those training runs and race?
So I mean, in 2 days we'll start the training run, and the first training run, it's always like checking it out. There's no need to win a training run. So once again, I'll be checking it out. I mean, just trying to ski well, and not like, no need to fight for a tuck, just solid skiing and hitting the line. That's like the main goal. Because I know like I had fast split. I mean, I'm pretty sure I won the split up top in the downhill and the bottom split, but I do know where I need to fix. It's the middle part, Daytona turn. I didn't nail that, was really close to the net, basically stopped. So need to fix that. And I think that first training run's all about just figuring out where to go and good skiing. Second training run, a little more race day focus. And then the race day and just putting everything out there and just trusting it. I mean, I have good stuff to build off of from last year. I mean, I think those downhill results were my like second scores in downhill, I think. So I think I like Cortina. And the Super G, I mean, it's just a fun Super G, so I'm very excited for that.
So skis, as we know, whether you're slalom, GS, Super G, or downhill, super important equipment. Talk about the relationship you have with your rep and your ski company.
Yeah, no, so I've been with Rossi. Actually, it's kind of a fun fact that I've only ever been on Rossi. So, I mean, and they've been fantastic to me. Like, they have supported me through all this. I have some of the fastest skis I could get. I guess they're the fastest right now. And yeah, I mean, I think it's super important to know, like, there are different skis and different, they all ski different, and Rossi works for me and they're so great. And I think just knowing what you need, and I think tech, I mean, my ski tech, Rock, he's been phenomenal. He's working with me and Jackie, so he's just doing Rossi skis. And I mean, he does so much work in it. This sport requires a lot of work.
What's
So.
that communication between you and him? Can you just say, hey, dull the tips, or hey, they seem this or that? Is that communication super intense with him?
Yeah, I mean, he at first, like, he like didn't know what I needed, and I just had to keep communicating with him, being like, oh, this is how I like, this is blah, blah, blah. And now he can actually like watch my skiing and tell. And he'll come over sometimes and just like dole the tips or tails. And like, I mean, sometimes I go up to him and it's just super easy to be like, I think this is the problem. He's like, oh yeah, okay, and just does it. And then I'll go back around and it's like magic. He just knows exactly what needs to be done. It's so insane.
Lauren, last question. It's about bucket hats. You've got one on. How many do you have? Where did this come from? Because it's so much fun.
Well, how many do you think I have?
Five?
I have six with me, but I have 26 all together.
Oh my goodness. Can you did
So
you find a St. Anton bucket hat?
I didn't find one, I know, but it's more of like I could travel around, and if I stumble upon a good one, it's like, well, I have to buy it because it's just so good. And I think it's they're kind of fun because they all like they've all come from all over. Like, well, Sam got me this one, and like a bunch, they're all just from different places and have different stories. And I think they're just, I mean, I don't know, they're just kind of funny, so I can't not do it.
Well, I love it. And any kids li listening out there, if you see a cool bucket hat, get it, send it to Lauren. We'll figure out how to get it to her. And we will have her have 126 in 1 year
That's
from
the goal. It's a Jigeska, a bajillion bucket hats.
right. Well, thank you, Lauren. Congratulations. History was made. You were only, I think, the sixth ever American to win it, a Super G on the World Cup, starting with Cindy Nelson, won the very first Super G ever. And you have now won the last Super G ever. So right now, the Americans have bookended the Super G World Cup.
I just got the chills from that. It's still setting in.
Cool. Well, ski safe, ski fast, and we'll talk to you next week.
You so much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening and watching to the Catching Up with the Cougs podcast. If you liked it, spread the word, share with your friends, coaches, teammates, and club. You can find us either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just search Catching Up with the Cougs. You can also watch it on YouTube at the Elite Team channel. That's spelled ELITEAM on YouTube. In our next episode, we will be talking about Cortina, which is also the venue for the 2026 Olympics for all the women's alpine races. So, an incredibly important course to know and perform well on this year. Thanks for listening and look for bucket hats to send to the Cougs.